The short answer to Mr. Johnson's hypothetical about what I'm going to do with respect to the legislative history is basically twofold. I don't think we resort to legislative history to interpret an unambiguous statute, but even if we did resort to that legislative history, I don't think it necessarily stands for the proposition that he would like it to stand for. The somewhat longer answer, and I will go through that for both sides, is that Section 501C provides that if a creditor does not timely file a proof of such creditor's claim, the debtor or the trustee may file a proof of such claim. Federal Rule of Bankruptcy Procedure 3004 provides if a creditor does not timely file a proof of claim, the debtor or trustee may file a proof of claim within 30 days after the expiration of the time for filing claims. Nothing in either Section 501C or Rule 3004 suggests the trustee may only file a proof of claim on behalf of a creditor under certain circumstances. And nothing in either suggests that a proof of claim filed by the trustee within the 30 days allowed by Rule 3004 is not timely filed. Referring specifically to the two cases that debtor cited in his brief, Drew versus Royal, 256 BR 799, BAP, 10th Circuit, 2001. In that case, the court disallowed proofs of claim tardily filed by the trustee because they were untimely. The trustee's deadline was August 1998, and the proofs of claim were not filed until January 2000. And relying on the legislative history of Section 501C, the court went on to state in dicta, the purpose of Section 501C was mainly to protect the debtor if the creditor's claim was non-dischargeable. In the In re Nettles case, 251 BR 899, Bankruptcy Middle District of Florida, 2000, the court disallowed proofs of claim that were tardily filed, again, by the trustee because they were untimely and because it found the trustee filed the proofs of claim to maximize his fees. Neither case is pertinent. Trustee Wine filed the proof of claim at issue in this case well within the time allowed by Rule 3004. Neither case is controlling. I did not find, and debtor did not cite, any controlling authority. And with no disrespect intended, neither case is persuasive in its effort to limit a trustee's ability to file a proof of claim on behalf of a creditor under Section 501C. The legislative history upon which both the Drew and Nettles courts relied can be helpful in interpreting an ambiguous statute. However, Section 501C is unambiguous. And even if Section 501C were ambiguous, the legislative history says only that Section 501C's purpose is mainly to protect the debtor if the creditor's claim is non-dischargeable. The legislative history does not say Section 501C's only purpose is to protect the debtor if the creditor's claim is non-dischargeable. If that were Section 501C's only purpose, there would be no reason to allow the trustee, who does not represent the debtor or have any duty to protect the debtor from non-dischargeable claims, to file a proof of claim on behalf of the creditor. For those reasons, I find the reasoning of the court in In re Schmidt, 333 BR 868, 870, Bankruptcy Northern District of Florida, 2005, much more persuasive. Quoting from that case, I do not agree with the interpretation of Section 501C as set forth in Nettles. The statute clearly permits the trustee to file a proof of claim on behalf of a creditor that failed to file one, and Rule 3004 sets the time limit. If the trustee complies with that time limit, then there is nothing in either the rules nor the bankruptcy code to support disallowance of the claim. The statute is clear and unambiguous, and as such, any inquiry into its meaning and intent must begin and end with its language. The court cites U.S. versus Ron Pear Enterprises, Inc., 489 U.S., 235, 240, a 1989 Supreme Court decision. The court goes on to say, the court's sole duty is to enforce it according to its terms. Again, citing Ron Peer Enterprises. The court goes on. Furthermore, in Nettles, the court found that the trustee filed the claims in order to maximize his fee. The debtor has presented no evidence of such a motive in this case. A desire on behalf of the trustee to distribute available estate funds to creditors whose debts were listed and acknowledged by the debtor in his filings and would be discharged by the bankruptcy rather than returning those funds to the debtor is sufficient motivation for the trustee to file claims on behalf of creditors who fail to do so. While the trustee may not have an affirmative duty to file such proofs of claims, he likewise has no duty to refrain from doing so in order that the debtor receive a windfall while receiving a discharge in bankruptcy. That's an end quote, and that's from page 870 of the decision. Back to my words now. Moreover, even if Section 510C did specify the circumstances under which a trustee is permitted to file a proof of claim on behalf of a debtor, which it bears repeating, it does not, a document that states the nature and amount of a claim and evidences the claimant's intent to hold the debtor liable and pursue that claim qualifies as an informal proof of claim. That's Maynard Savings Bank versus Michaels, 286 BR 684 691, BAP, 8th Circuit, 2002, and the citations therein. And an informal proof of claim does not need to be filed with the bankruptcy court. That's First American Bank and Trust of Minot versus Butler Machinery Co., 876 F 2nd 681 682, 8th Circuit, 1989, and the citations therein. Consequently, the proof of claim credit bureau The proof of claim Credit Collections Bureau Inc. mistakenly sent to Trustee Wine would constitute an informal proof of claim that was effectively amended when Trustee Wine forwarded it to the court for filing. Debtor's objection is therefore overruled, and Trustee Wine, you may submit an appropriate order.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you both.
Thank you, Your Honor.